Well, I need to correct the order of service. Now, I had an opportunity to correct this order. I saw an advance copy, and it just went right by me that the secret of life had been rendered as the secret life. So the actual title is The Secret of Life. Okay? So that's what you should leave here knowing it and able to repeat it to anyone else who may ask you. Let's read one secret from Plutarch, the old Roman author Plutarch, on the soul. The soul, at the point of death, has the same experience as those who are being initiated into great mysteries. At first, one wanders and wearily hurries to and fro, insecure and suspicious through the dark, as one uninitiated. Then come all the terrors before the final initiation, shuddering, trembling, sweating, amazement. Then one is struck with a marvelous light. One is received into pure regions and meadows with voices and dances and the majesty of holy sounds and shapes. Among these, he who has fulfilled initiation wanders free and released, bearing his crown, joins in the divine communion, and consorts with pure and holy men, beholding those who live here, uninitiated, an uncleansed horde, trodden underfoot of him and huddled together in mud and fog, abiding in their miseries through fear of death and mistrust of the blessings there. Uncleansed horde. Everybody else. Well, let this uncleansed horde now rise in body or spirit into pure regions and meadows with voices and dances and the majesty of holy sounds and shapes and sing hymn number 90 from all the fret and fever of the day. Hymn number 90. Thank you. Now, the secret of church and religious practice is all in that song. Right, you get that, right? Right? The moments when we turn away, you take a time in sanctuary. There's this time in sanctuary with a community. And there's also that time alone. Deaf to all confusing outer din, that doesn't mean with sticks in your ears. But taking that time apart, that time set apart, that's not filled with all that other stuff. But here's a question. For those of us who had the inclination as well as the means to go to college, when did you decide on your major? How many decided in your first year? Whoa. Second? Third? Fourth? Fifth, maybe sixth, like one of my roommates and maybe some of Bobby's friends. Not Bobby herself, I think. Did anyone come in thinking that you'd major in one thing, but you ended up in something else? Yeah, but pretty common experience. Did anyone come in with one major in mind and stick with it the whole way through? Wow. Wow. A clear minority. But a strong minority. When the first week of my first year, the university president held a reception for new undergraduates in his home. Not many young women came to the event. The ratio at my school in those days was about 25% female to 75% male. My, how things have changed. I spotted one young woman standing by herself, and I made my way towards her, eager to share my plans to double major in philosophy and psychology, of course. And then, who knows, right? And of course, hoping that that would impress her. But to be polite, I asked her first what she hoped to study. Good male manners, don't you think? She proceeded to tell me her detailed plans to reconstruct the folk religion of ancient Greece. Not the elite stuff that, of course, I must have read about when I had studied the classics, but the religious life of the common people. Naturally, that meant learning ancient Greek as well as modern, in addition to the Latin and the other languages she'd done in high school. After that, she'd plunge into certain texts with the help of this professor and that one, whose presence had been a decisive factor when choosing among the various schools that had accepted her. Of course, we were fortunate that our school possessed some of the very few copies of those texts still in existence, weren't we? Hello? Hello? My eyes must have glazed over, especially at how she told me all of this with perfect humility. No boasting at all. I ran into her again decades later when she was a professor at another university. She didn't remember me and seemed surprised that I remembered her. How could I forget someone who was so clear about what she wanted from her studies right from the start? Which brings me to another question. What did you hope to get from your studies? From the subject? What have you hoped to get from your studies, from the subject or subjects that interest you, whether you pursued them through academic study or some other way? Is it just money? Or mostly money? Maybe 50% money, 50% something else? Or is it mostly something else? What have you been looking for? Is it different now from what you were looking for at first? And what was that? What was that? Well, by my third year of college, I had still not picked a major. The first quarter was passed. The second one was going fast. That dual major in psychology and philosophy was long out of the picture. What was it going to say on my diploma? Actually, I wasn't sure that it was going to say anything, or if there would be any diploma at all. I'd lost track of why I was studying, what I wanted from all this reading and writing and talking. I certainly had an interest in India, its religion, writings, music and people. But the Department of South Asian Languages and Literature only offered graduate degrees. I was the only undergraduate, possibly the first one ever to do it. Oh, you smarty pants who came in knowing you wanted to study ancient Greek. Studying the Tamil language, probably the first. And I was used to taking language classes with graduate students around me. But I'd had to bail out of a couple of other graduate classes that were way over my head, certain that I would never be able to handle such intensity. Maybe I was wasting my time and should just save up that tuition money and head to India, like so many other young Americans were doing in those days. Gail and I were actually in India at the same time, but we were going different places and didn't meet each other. I would find myself gripped at once by fatigue and a restless anxiety. Sometimes I'd be up all night long, writing, smoking this or that, listening to tunes while trying not to disturb my roommates in those days, long before the Walkman or the iPod could plug you into mobile, musical, complete musical privacy. One night, things got bad, and none of my self-soothing strategies would do the trick. I couldn't focus on my coursework, but there was that stack of Zap comics on the coffee table in that one room beside the kitchen that wasn't being used as a bedroom. I picked one out of the pile. I also picked up a book that I'd found at a bookstore near campus and sat down with these two texts in a beat-up, dusty chair. Now, how many of you remember Zap comics and the artist Robert Crumb? Not everybody, but a good portion. Well, were they an important part of your education, Laurel?
Okay. They were actually, I heard a lot. Yeah, me. There's some life lessons in there.
Me too. They're very important to me and to many people. They provided a whole generation with comic relief in troubled times. The Vietnam War was still raging. The draft was like its jaws waiting to snap you up and swallow. Then later, you know what. But at least we had Zap Comics to make us laugh. Certain individual panels or pages had been made into posters that had melted into our brains. Crumb's best-loved character was Mr. Natural, a vulgar, raunchy, and often cynical parody. He's on the cover of your order of service. Of the many gurus who were popping up everywhere. Some came from overseas, many from India, and others were homegrown. Some were sincere souls, eager to share physical, mental, and spiritual techniques and teachings that could bring greater calm or self-awareness to those who learned to practice them. Others proved over time to be hucksters who exploited their followers psychologically, financially, and often sexually as well. Mr. Natural gave us a needed heads up about such gurus as often as he gave us a laugh. Well, the book that I'd chosen to read along with the comic was called Myths, Dreams, and Mysteries. It was written by Mirce Eliade, one of the most famous professors at my university. He was a historian of religions, a Romanian by birth, and a controversial figure. I didn't know anything about the controversies, but I did know that for some reason he kept his offices not at the university's religion department, but at nearby Meadville Lombard, which was a Unitarian Universalist seminary. I'd never read a book by him before. But now I couldn't put it down. I was fascinated with how it ranged from so-called primitive societies to Norse mythology to yoga and Judaism and Christianity and Zen. One of the early chapters discusses the European myth of the noble savage, who lives in perfect happiness and harmony with nature. Before Eliade shows us how every supposedly savage society actually has such a myth of its own. Looking back to a time when all of us were stronger, wiser, more integrated into our world than any of us can be now. How, in other words, every noble savage also knows and carries with him or her the myth of the noble savage. I stayed up all night and I read that book from cover to cover. The last chapter is called The Initiatory Significance of Suffering. The Initiatory Significance of Suffering. Great title. It focuses on experiences of initiation from diverse societies in which the religious initiate may be subjected to tortures of the body and spirit. It gets much worse after that song, Newcomers. Well, these might include fasting, sleep deprivation, being forced to stay up all night or night after night, or the use of powerful hallucinogenic drugs, cutting, burning, piercing the flesh with skewers. You may have heard of the Sundance. The Plains Indians did. And encounters with supernatural beings, some benevolent and some violent. But Eliade won't let us just hold our nose and go, ew, those people are so nasty. He goes at once from Plains Indian sun dancers to the beloved Christian Saint Anthony, recalling how he, quote, was tortured by devils. He was lifted into the air, smothered under the earth. The devils gashed his flesh, dislocated his ribs, cut him to pieces, and so Anthony becomes holy. Holy. That is to say that he has killed the profane man that he was and has come to life as another, a regenerated man, a saint. But in a non-Christian perspective, this also means that the demons have succeeded in their aim, which was just that of killing the profane man and enabling him to regenerate himself. In identifying the forces of evil with the devil's, Christianity has deprived them of any positive function in the economy of salvation. But before Christianity, the demons were masters of initiation. Wow! I have just been through a long night myself. After weeks of doubt and torments that were certainly milder than St. Anthony's, though they filled my vision, made it impossible for me to see anything else, much as it had happened for him. But the long night was ending. The sun was going to come up. Now I knew what I wanted to focus on for my major. I wanted to study things like this, to discover such deep connections across apparent barriers of time and culture, language. I was so excited by this breakthrough that I couldn't even think of sleeping. So I picked up the comic book to see if Mr. Natural could help me to wind down. Turned out to be one of his best stories, one of his best adventures ever. The old religious rascal has been asked to teach the secret of life, but he realizes that he's forgotten it. He goes for a walk to try to clear the cobwebs for his head, but suddenly falls into a deep pit. No one hears his cries for help, so he decides to make the best of it and, quote, get down to some serious meditating. He assumes a ridiculous parody of a yoga posture, standing on one foot. He's holding one leg behind his back, and then he points at his nose. He says, "This should do it." It does. Robert Crumb's famous mastery of line pulls the tension in each panel tighter and tighter until, pop! A great horned demon bursts into the pit, accompanied by a smaller one that's much cuter but just as ferocious. They proceed to beat the stuffing out of Mr. Natural, thrashing and gashing him to within an inch of his life, or maybe an inch or two past that. But at that very moment, when he seems done in, it happens. He remembers the forgotten secret of life, which is? What is it? Do you know? Now, if you've read the story yourself, because I think I saw Laurel kind of re-entering that very comic back there. If you've read the story yourself and remember his answer, please don't say it yet. Instead, let's hear your answers. Take a moment and remember a long, dark night that you've been through. Or maybe it was a long, dark day, or week, or decade. Was there a sentence, a phrase, or just a few words you found that helped to make things better? Maybe you heard them, or seemed to hear them. And maybe once was enough. Or maybe you repeated them over and over again like a mantra. That's how it was for me. I'm not asking for the whole story. I'd like to hear it later. We'll make time. But it would take too long today. For now, let's just hear those few words that seemed to crystallize into a light at the end of the tunnel or shining down into the pit. It's a lot to ask, I know, to share something so personal and precious. Not everyone will want to, and that's fine. But are there a few of us who will do it? When we're ready, remember that dark night. and speak when you're ready. This too shall pass.
I can do this.
The sun will come up in the morning.
The sun will come up in the morning.
There's a lesson in this. I don't know what it is.
There's a lesson in this. I don't know what it is, but there's a lesson.
It's okay. It's so okay.
It's okay. It's so okay.
You're not the first person.
You're not the first person.
This will end most times.
This will end most times.
Remain in awe of
everything.
All life is temporary.
All life is temporary.
Live in the present.
Live in the present.
Love conquers all.
Love conquers all. I'm not writing these down. You'll have to get them again from each other. Learn them. It's the kind of thing we can share sometimes over the coffee hour or any time we're here. Well, the least that I can do to thank you for sharing such deep things is to tell you the secret of life that Mr. Natural remembered in the pit. And I wonder if for many of us, finding those powerful words was something like remembering rather than discovering for the first time. For Mr. Natural, it was hang loose. Just two words, hang loose. Be present and engaged, yes, but not too tightly tied to what? To outcomes, to how you look, to how others receive your efforts in the world, to the world itself. That good enough for you, Mr. Natural's answer? Well, I suppose I still owe you more than the secret of life as it comes from a comic book, so now I'll share mine. The phrase that came to me that night that finally helped me to get to sleep, and through other nights that followed with varying degrees of darkness and variety of demons. Have faith in yourself. Have faith in yourself, over and over again, like a chant for me, a repetition. It was an enactment, not an understanding. It was a performance of those words, not a belief in their great intelligence or even their truth. It was something I could do, buzzing like a mosquito in my own ears. But a buzz that means something. Have faith in yourself. Have faith in yourself. It doesn't mean know that you're right, either that you can be or you must be while everyone else is wrong. It's not like that at all. It's something to do beyond words, beyond information, even beyond belief. Have faith. In yourself, do it. That's all. When I asked you what was the secret of life, you may have thought, I don't know. Hold this thought for a moment. It could be the best answer of all. I don't know. And so I grow. I'm free to wonder. free for awe, freed from having to know it all. My sense of humor about how little I know already carries me along towards more or less. Sometimes it's hard to say which one we want or which one we need, more or less. The comic book belonged to a friend. I wish it had been mine and that I still had it now. Money is not the secret. Well, I've had so many first editions in my life of comics. Money is not the secret of life, but it certainly helps sometimes with things like our children's college educations or our churches. I do still have Eliade's book. And as you expect, as I'm sure you expect, I pulled it off the shelf to help prepare for this sermon. And there, stuck in the chapter on initiatory suffering, on 3x5 cards turned yellow, I found some notes I'd made that night, right where I'd left them 40 years ago. Some of those notes I can't make any sense of now, so I won't ask you to try. But here's one. Step back perpetually from who you are and what you do. Step back as an observer until you find laughter. Then understand, your peace does not depend on a system of truths. I put that in quotes. In other words, what? Hang loose. In other words, have faith in yourself. In other words, I don't know. In other words, it's okay. This too shall pass. And all the things that you shared with us before, I don't know and I really don't have to. Just keep that sense of humor sharp. But how fortunate I was to discover both my college major and the secret of life on one dark night that broke like a shell filled with many bright mornings. Now, in case you're saying to yourself, that's not the real secret of life about what I just said, or Mr. Natural Voice in the Pit, maybe that means that you know a better one. You just forgot it until this moment. Maybe if you share it, even if you just think it quietly, you'll help free us all from so much shuddering, trembling, and sweating. And we'll be struck with a marvelous light, received into pure regions and meadows with voices and dances and the majesty of holy sounds and shapes. If there's a secret of life to be learned, which will show this to us right here, right now, then so may it be. So may it be. So may it be.